Look up there in the sky. It's a bird, a plane. It's Handsome Boys Comics Hour.
Those boys are so handsome.
One writer.
One artist.
One weekly discussion of comics, nerd culture. I'm your host, Robbie Darn, the literature geek and writer.
And I'm your other host, a little slow.
Well, like Powerade slows you down.
Powerade does slow me down. Eric C. Goodnight, professional artist and illustration nerd.
And we are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour, your home for news, reviews, slightly antagonistic banter, and much, much more. This is episode 54, or 2.
Mm-hmm.
2.2.
Depending on what numbering system you do.
Yeah, I know. 2.102. Mm-hmm. I think we're just going to... We're going to go away with episode numbers for the... At least for the... Inside the podcast. I don't think we need to dwell on how prodigious we are.
I think we do.
Okay.
I think we need to brag about it.
Okay, we can do that soon.
I support it. There's a lot of character in that introduction.
There's a lot of character in that one.
Yeah.
We are live in person together in Eric's beautiful apartment in Tampa, Florida.
It would be a lot more beautiful if I cleaned it.
Well, you know, it has a certain bachelor charm.
It certainly does that.
It has, you know...
Computer parts in the floor.
Computer parts. Lots of computer parts. Electrostatic bags.
Yeah. Art stuff.
Comic books.
Everywhere.
Comic books.
Comical books.
Dave Stevens art books.
That Dave Stevens book has been there for quite a while.
It has. I think I've seen it every single time.
I'm pretty sure you have. It's not open to some booby picture at this point. You just have to look at the booby picture on the front.
Yeah. Plus his little...
His handsome smiling mug there.
Little portrait.
You should flip through there when we're done and take a look at the picture of him with a mustache. It's...
Should I?
You maybe.
maybe.
Yeah. It's something special anyway.
It's something special. Well, I think we should just cut right to it and get right into checking in.
Just right in the chase, huh?
Yeah, cut it.
Wow. That's the cutting noise. You didn't know that?
Yeah. Checking is a segment where Eric and I talk about what we've been up to this week. Eric, what have you been up to this week? What have you done? What you did?
What I did? Well, as you might know, I volunteered some hours of my life.
Well, you are a charitable man.
I am. At the Tampa Hackerspace, which is... They've just got a new building, and it's a really cool space. They're going to have a bunch of... You know, they're talking about getting welding equipment and... saws and laser cutters and all kinds of crazy stuff, and they've got a really big space. Like, part of it is kind of like a garage, and there's a nicer area they're going to put a server in, and it's exciting. I spent a couple hours ripping carpet up and taking shelves down.
I've done that before.
Yeah,
it's not fun.
Let's see where my hands are still red and irritated from ripping that shit up.
Was it moldy on the bottom?
It was not. They did nail molding down over it. Baseboards, whatever you want to call them.
So you have to get those up first?
No. We did not do that, but I did rip some of it off the wall.
Nah.
And almost the paneling as well, pulling it off the ground.
Nah.
They got a picture of me ripping it off the ground, wearing a t-shirt that said nerd.
Well... Yes.
Truth in labeling.
Yes. You know, that's what you do when you people rip up carpets and...
I guess so.
Nerds.
You gotta nerd it up.
I ripped up carpeting and stuff on.
It was not my favorite thing. No,
especially, I had moldy carpeting.
Yeah.
That was not fun at all.
It doesn't sound like the best thing.
That was kind of gross.
It does sound a little gross.
But
I did that and...
Someone has to do it.
For 5 hours, I did that and moved heavy shit and it was... It was a special day. Other than that, as you know, I've learned to install WordPress on on a Linux server. Made my own lamp server.
Lamps?
Lamps.
Like the light source? Mm-hmm.
Like a light source. In no way is it Linux, Apache, PHP. I missed MySQL in the middle there. Those things.
Okay. Words. All of those things. I don't really...
Oh, that's okay.
I don't really know any of those things are, but okay. That's. I appreciate that.
Well, they make magic happen.
Nah, that's what I figured. I'm pretty sure they're very wonderful things.
You just wave your hands at it and stuff happens.
It's like the Force.
Other than that, I don't think I've done enough interesting to really talk about. Aww. It is very difficult to install WordPress on. It is quite easy to do it on someone that provides hosting. It is pretty difficult to make a computer
it run does it WordPress. Yourself?
Yeah, it's. I don't recommend it unless you're
a masochist.
Well, I was going to say much more savvy than I am, but
both.
It's
still, one or the other.
Yeah, of course, most people that are more savvy than I am got to be more savvy than I am by
going
by, yes, doing it, yeah. Yeah, that's the only real way. That's about it.
That's about it.
I'm boring as hell.
I guess it's my turn to talk about
things. I was going to say, maybe you did a thing. I don't know.
I listen to things.
You listen to things?
I listen to things. I have a podcast to suggest that everyone should listen to. I
think everyone.
Everyone.
Not just do. Am I part of this set of people?
I like it, I think.
Okay.
It's called Rachel and Miles Explain the X-Men. And that's explain with an X. No E in there. Explain the X-Men.
Boo.
No, come on. It's the X-Men. You have to be with the X-Men. But it's a podcast. It's relatively new. It's only like 8 episodes out. Like 35, 45 minute long episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty much what the title is. They're basically working their way up from starting Silver Age and move up through. They're in the Claremont run right now, and I imagine they'll be in that for a long time. But
for 100, yeah, as long as he wrote it.
17 years.
It'll take them that long.
But they are basically just explaining the X-Men, which is one of the most continuity heavy, crazy,
yeah,
timeline, alternate story, dimension. But
you are double weirdo.
No, a lot of people say, I want to get an X-Men, but I don't want to have to read 30 years of comic books to understand what's going on.
Just make it up.
Well, they do a very good job of explaining all these characters and the insanity that is surrounding all their alternate histories and timelines and all that, how they relate to each other. And it's kind of impressive how knowledgeable these two are about the X-Men and comic books. So anyone who likes comic books, I would say, I mean, I know a lot about the X-Men, but they surpass me by a lot.
I don't think people that like comic books listen to us.
Oh, okay. That explains a lot, I guess.
So I don't think there's any overlap.
I know. No, the Venn diagram in our comic book podcast is that no one who listens actually reads comic books.
No.
But it's a very, very informative. They had Greg Rucka on a recent episode. He's writing the new Cyclops book. About the young Cyclops and the Starjammers.
Mm-hmm. That's his band?
Not yet.
Not yet.
They may have, I mean, they're still...
Cyclops and the Starjammers.
They're space pirates at this moment, but they may form a band. It's possible.
I think they should. One of them needs to play some sort of, like, electronic harp from the future.
They also had a whole episode dedicated to the various animated shows about the X-Men. They talk about the run-up to the... They have a run-up episode to the Days of Future Past movie. So, it's interesting. They vary it up. It's not too long either, so, you know. I could go for a little bit more length because I have all the time to listen to it at work, but most people, I understand, don't have just... Eight hours a day to just listen to whatever they want. But definitely check that out. Rachel Moss explained the X-Men. Other thing I want to check in with...
With is
a good word. It is the new Wolf Mother album, which I know Eric was a fan of their first album.
I liked it okay.
I like it a lot, actually. Their second album, you probably
like it more than I do.
I probably do. The second album, I know you don't like.
I know, I've never heard it.
Really?
I think you're thinking of someone else.
You told me you didn't like it.
Mm-mm. No, that's not the case. I cannot even think of what it sounds like.
It's like the first album, but more like psychedelic.
That sounds like I might enjoy it. Like, we're talking about, like, Black Sabbath-y?
No,
or
no,
are you talking
no,
about,
like
Beatles?
No, it's hard to... It's just more, like...
When I think psychedelic, I think of, like, stoner metal. Like
No. Then more like Jefferson Airplane or something like that.
Weird.
That's... It's more... I mean, that they just... like, their first album was, like, Led Zeppelin. Mm-hmm. And the second album was more like... I don't know, Jefferson Airplane or Pink Floyd, somewhere in there.
Okay.
This album is, I like it. This album is definitely more Sabbath influenced. It's more, okay. their previous albums were more tighter sounding. This is definitely a crunchier, like, sludgier production.
Interesting.
Which I'm not against. I just think the band is better when they are
tighter,
sound crisper and cleaner, mm-hmm. but...
Do you think it's... I kind of like music that's a little bit rough around the edges. You know, that's record, like, not immaculate, overproduced.
Well, I think the first album was the perfect level of production.
Yeah,
it wasn't too much. This one, I think they are going for that rough, raw sound. I just don't think it suits them when they're excellent musicians and they have a lead singer that sounds like Robert Plant,
I would say
make it sound clean, but they're obviously going for, hey, we want to sound, but
a little dirty.
It's weird because in the middle of the album, they just have a couple songs that sound like garage rock sounds. They sound like they're trying to be the Strokes.
Interesting.
Or the Rolling, or the Stones, like early Stones.
I could get behind that. I'll give it a shot.
You should listen to it. The beginning and end is just kind of that raw. Kind of more Sabbath influenced sound.
Interesting.
But middle is just, it was very perplexing listening to it because I was just like, why is this? It's nothing like I've heard from them before, and it's just very weird. Wolf Mother's band, they put out 3 albums in over a decade. So I don't think they care about putting out a lot of records, so they just, you know, do what they want. So there's, you know.
Well, there's not really a lot of money in it anymore.
I think that's the strategy from a lot of bands is just pump out a lot of records and tour with them as much as you can, and that's how they survive.
I think most bands, it's certainly more touring and merchandise and all that sort of stuff. They might just be doing, you know, more touring and less making records.
I haven't followed up on their
business model.
No, I haven't. So
their accountant.
I've not done a lot of research on Wolf Mother's business model.
That is unfortunate.
And, or the branding or anything. Yeah,
I want you to check in with that next week.
But I'd suggest anyone who's like their... I definitely like it a lot more than their second album. I'll say that.
Okay.
First album still... I really, really, really like it, so I don't know.
Do you know what I heard the other day that I really enjoyed a lot more than the first time I heard it was... Foxy Shazam's second album.
Okay.
The Church of Rock and Roll.
I've listened to a little bit of Foxy Shazam. I was not a big fan.
I really liked their first album, but I think it was mostly because I saw them live. They've got really amazing energy. And I think maybe if I saw them perform the new songs live, I would enjoy the second album even more. But, you know, after maturing for a couple of years, it got a lot better behind my back. Which I thought was interesting. I don't usually reverse myself on albums that way.
Yeah. I also did happen to listen to the most recent Mastodon album on the way up again.
Yeah.
Just give it a shot.
Still, no.
Nothing.
What does it sound like? When did it come out?
The most recent one? Like 2012.
Oh.
You're
talking about The Hunter.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'm aware of that.
Yeah,
That's the one that I thought you were always making fun of.
I am. That's what I was. I was just giving it another shot because they're about to release a new album.
Okay.
And I was just like, well, let's see.
It's okay.
Nothing on it. There's one song I would say that I liked. The rest are just kind of white noise.
Yeah, and even, it's not called The Czar. That's one of the songs on it I liked. It's, is it called Oblivion? What's it called?
Which one?
I'm remembering song titles from the Mastodon album.
Oblivion's not the one I'm thinking of.
The Air album. I can't remember what it's called.
Oh, Crack the Sky?
Crack the Sky is what it's called, yeah. I'm remembering other song titles from that.
Okay, I liked Crack the Sky Rolling Up, but
I liked it. Not, I thought it was like a B-minus album.
Yeah, that sounded like it's
from a band that was my favorite band at the time
it came out. Well, Leviathan is like one of my favorite albums of all time.
Yeah.
Blood Mountain's very, very good, and then Crack the Sky is.
It's like the other way.
Yeah,
we've had this discussion.
We have
a couple of times.
Yeah.
So we're boring. This is a repeat. We're gonna about to have a clip show.
We're trying to catch up. So, yeah, on our production schedule. So we just go. Remember that one time?
Doesn't really work because we're actually recording it.
That's true. So I think that's it for checking in.
I think it's
time to flop it out.
Wait, really?
Okay, not actually flop it out because we're right next to each other. That'd be dangerous.
It would be scary. Someone's going to get poked.
So it's time for weekly floppies. Little noise. Little cute little noise.
I'm just dancing.
Yes. Week floppies is when Eric and I talk about the week's news books and tell you to buy or do not buy them. And we are inevitably correct, unless we disagree. And then you just, choose the one you like more.
Then it's a popularity contest.
We're going to start off with Green Arrow, number 32, DC.
Or number 2.
Or number 2, if you read the episode notes before I update them. We're going back in time to the beginning of the New 52. This is written by Jeff Lemire, art by Andrea Sorrentino. They're also credited as storytellers.
Yes.
Yeah, so I'm guessing Sorrentino also has something to do with the plotting and all that. Marcelo Maialo was colors. Desi Cienti doing the letters. This was solicited as a jumping on point for Jeff Lemire's exciting run. And Eric's
is that very telling?
Begrudging noise as I and I have a little beef with that sentiment because there is a lot.
You can
follow along for the most part, but there are characters in here that are not explained, and you're just kind of supposed to accept what they are.
What he said. I don't think I could agree with that more. It's just all this stuff is happening. They're introducing a bunch of characters. You have no idea. I don't know. There's not really a whole lot of description or setup for this.
That is another point why I don't understand why DC does not have recap pages. It makes it so much easier to jump into a book that you're not reading before. And I don't understand that this is so unfriendly to new readers when you can't.
The thing you need to realize is DC doesn't want stinky new readers. They want the old readers to give them all their money and then go away.
The story's okay. I like the art a lot. It reminds me of Frazier Irving a little bit, actually.
I don't think it's as good as Frazier Irving.
No, it's not as good. It's not as moody.
Very rough. You know what it kind of reminds me of is, remember that old John Constantine book we read in like week 2?
Mm-hmm.
That's what it reminds me of.
Yeah, a little bit like that.
But especially when you get to this.
Yes.
It looks like it's very much trying to make Green Arrow like Hawkeye. You know, with this sort of cheeky, like, introducing the characters.
Well, I think that's a lot of comics are now trying to do.
Oh, yeah.
Inject kind of, they're like, hey, we can be funny too.
It really is pretty incongruous for me with the rest of the book. I don't think the humor's terribly effective. I think a lot of the characters are introduced pretty dumb. I don't know. I think this is a dumb book. And I like Jeff Lemire. It doesn't feel like I'm an idiot and I don't know how to write as much as either A, I'm writing for this specific DC audience that likes dumb books, or heavy editorial decisions that are saying, now put this in. And Lemire's just trying to make it as not stupid as he can.
I think the biggest flaw in this book is that there's so much in it.
It is a little too much. It's too much in that there's a lot of characters coming in and trying to do all these introductions, but it's also not enough because practically nothing happens. It's just sort of every character showing up and saying hi.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, if they focused on just have the fight scene between Green Arrow and these three, what are their names? Do they have a name for themselves?
The D-listers. I don't think they introduced themselves as, they jokingly refer to themselves as D-listers after Green Arrow makes fun of them. I mean, Hawkeye makes fun of
Killer
them.
Killer Moth and, someone and other people. Dark Girl.
And I guess that's why they're trying to introduce this as a jumping off point, because it's all these characters showing up and saying hi.
Yeah.
Instead of telling a story. Yeah. And it's, I don't know. I don't think this is a particularly good moment to jump into.
I
would not be excited about reading more of this.
No, we should. If you're going to read this, probably go pick it up where Jeff Lee Mark starts writing it. Because that's probably when he cleaned it up, because it was doing terribly up until that point. And then he
kind of. That doesn't surprise me.
And then he kind of revitalized the book. And I'm sure it's connections to the television show also helped.
It seems like it's heavily borrowing on that.
But yeah, I like the art in well enough, but there's not much a lot to sell on this book, so I'm a do not buy.
Yeah, I am as well. Do not buy this terrible book.
Double do not buy.
I'm sorry, Jeff.
I don't think it's all his fault.
Yeah, no, it's clearly not.
Our next book of the week is Batman Eternal number 9. This is the weekly Batman book, written by 40 people.
It takes a village to raise an idiot.
As you were fond of saying.
I do love saying that.
Where the hell is the credits page? Do they even bother having one?
Well, there it is. There's the cover.
Well, here's how I found it. Scott Snyder and James Tynion IV doing the story. John Layman with the script. Brie Fox and Tim Seeley as contributing writers. Gillum March doing art. Tomo Mori on color. Steve Wands doing the letters. I think this book is not very good.
I don't think it's terrible. I like Gillum March. I follow. Was it March or Marsh? I was going to say that I follow him on several places on the internet.
March.
Yeah, I don't even know his damn name.
It's not the art is not my.
No. It's a little bit on the dumb side. It is, I think, honestly, one of the better Batman stories that we've read. It's not better than Detective Comics for a long shot. But tell me what you were going to say. I'm sorry.
No, it's just kind of very.
By the numbers.
Yeah.
Definitely is that.
And it's just like the people don't talk like normal people. It's like it makes it very comic booky.
It is. And but I mean, that is pretty much what you have to expect from these.
Like, they people, every single person in this book has to address Batman by saying, yes, Batman, or hey, Batman, or
He commands that level of respect.
After I say hello to you for the first time,
yes.
I wouldn't say your name in front of every, unless I'm like trying to.
Yes. Well, it's, you know, that is definitely something that irritates me. It did not bother me in this book. Like if there's a book with tons and tons of villains and, you know, characters that aren't often in the limelight and they have to drop names and it's very opaque, it's very obvious.
Yes.
That bugs the shit out of me. I would almost rather have the little subtitle, you know, like in Hawkeye or like in the book we just read,
here's a character.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm all for that, but it doesn't bother me that much. I just sort of hate that the Batman from Japan is even in this book because I like to pretend he doesn't exist.
Yeah, that's all your buddies doing. It's Grant Morrison.
He's no friend of mine, man. It's a terrible character.
Well, he did Batman Inc. He's the one who decided to let's have Batman's everywhere.
It's gross. But I don't know. I think it could possibly work, but he's a terrible character, and I hate everything about it.
Yeah, and I don't mind the art is fine.
I think it's nice. I would pretty much buy it for the art. There are a lot of aspects of it that I really enjoy. And I actually really like the reveal at the end. It intrigues me. I don't know if I'm a buy on this. It's a very sort of weak buy. I'm not trying to give the impression that I'm in love with this book. but we have certainly read worse Batman books.
Well, yes, we have read worse Batman books. This is a weekly book,
mm-hmm.
and so you're going to be spending, was it four? I think this is a $3.99 title. I want to say so. Okay, but that means you're spending $4 a week on this, and I don't think it's worth that. Because you can't just buy this once a month and go, okay, the next one, you can't spread it out. They're putting out a year of this book, and mm-hmm. I just don't. And I understand this is not the same story. They're not doing one story for that entire year. It's just kind of, I think, episodic. But still, I the reveal is interesting well enough, but I just, it does not intrigue me. The scripting is just too kind of generic for me.
It is a vanilla a Batman story, as I think you can get. After eating a lot of dog shit flavored ice cream, vanilla ice cream is all of a sudden very good. That's kind of my point.
I'm a do not buy.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I can't think of anyone I'd recommend it to either, unless you're fan of Julian Marsh.
Yeah, if there's, I mean, I would say if you want to read Batman, read the most recent Detective Comics
book. It's a much better book, and even though we're going to continue to read it.
The most recent issue of Even Zero Year was, I'd start reading there and just read those books.
It wasn't too bad, was it?
No, I liked it a lot. I wished all the other ones were like that. So that's another double do not buy.
Yep.
So next up, Marvel, and my favorite book ever.
The book that Robbie wishes he could make out with.
Yeah, Moon Knight number 4, written by Warren Ellis, art by Declan Shelby, colors by Jordi Belair, Chris Alopoulos doing letters. We're seeing the final aspect, I guess, of Moon Knight, kind of, is that he's now, he's going into dreamscapes, which after I saw the art previews, I'm like, oh, okay, I see what they're doing. But I think it was really interesting.
I love the way this is written. Yeah. I love the moment that it ends in.
Yeah.
It's like, I think, I don't know. Warren Ellis is becoming amazingly good at saying exactly the right thing.
Yeah.
I think that is the talent that he has developed, that To just get there and then end the book.
Yeah, just stop.
That is the most beautiful thing. It is so good.
There's no denouement. It's just kind of, there we are. That's it.
Yeah.
You're good. This book is amazing. I've been agonizing over if I should buy some of the pages from this, because Declan Shalvey sells a lot of anything he's not tied to, so I think he keeps like maybe one or two pages for most of these and then sells the rest. And there's a particular page that I like was agonizing over. It's one of these. I think it was.
Well, they're all gorgeous.
I think it's this one. It was on, because most of the ones that I really, really liked aren't for sale, because I think he's like, I spent a billion hours on them, I'm not going to sell them. But at least not online, like that one.
Yeah.
Page 11 or any of these ones where, like Declan Shelby on his Tumblr was posting all the art influence, like all the stuff Ellis was sending him, like French comics and like here.
I'm going to say it's a very French comics landscape.
Yeah. And he's like, he was sending him a lot of, hey, look at this. This is what I wanted to look like.
He clearly was leaning on the colors as well, because this is a very French comic colorscape as well. It's, the influences are pretty obvious. Do I have to drop the M word, or do we pretty much know who we're talking about here?
You can say it.
Do we know we're talking about Mobius?
Yes.
The Mobius.
The Mobius. But it's unbelievably gorgeous, as is all these books are. And again, the coloring is as important, I think, as anything, because of the starkness of Moon Knight versus the unbelievable, like, crazy colors.
They're clearly making as many artistic choices with the color as with any other part of it. It's great, and I hope. I know we at least talked about it. I don't know if we talked about it on the show about, you know, that hopefully we'll see the trend of the rock star colorists now.
Yeah,
because they make more of an impact, I think, than even the penciler. And
if there is one, it certainly is Jordi Belair.
Of course.
And we joke about, like, she does every book, but in a recent interview with CBR, she actually said in 1 month she colored 17 books.
That's fucking amazing. Oh my God.
17. I think she said she slept like 35 hours over the entire month.
That does not even surprise me.
She wasn't crazy.
That doesn't even surprise me.
Now she does 7, I think. Right now.
I'm going to say she needs to learn to say no.
That was a lot of the interview. Anyone who is subscribed to Warren Ellis' newsletter, I don't know if you've actually read the most recent one. I think it was on
Friday. So what is that?
It was on Friday.
Orbital what now?
OrbitalOperations.com is where you can subscribe. But there is some, I guess it's melancholy news. It upset me, but it doesn't surprise me, is that Warren Ellis is off this book after issue number 6.
That's fucked.
Yeah. But Declan Shelby's leaving with him. And they're going to have Brian Wood, who's a fine writer.
It will not be this. We have 2 issues left.
Yeah.
Of the most exciting things in comics.
But that's, he even talks about, he's like, Marvel wanted me to reinvigorate their IP, one of their IP, which he did it with Iron Man.
Yeah.
The Extremis storyline that kind of brought Iron Man into the modern kind of context of the Marvel Universe, and mm-hmm. that was Warren Ellis, and they're hoping, I guess, that it will jumpstart Moon Knight. And I love this book, and he says, with Moon Knight off my schedule, I will soon be announcing a new comics project that I've had in the works for a while, so it's not like he's not going to... He's still writing comic books. He's going to be writing another... It'll be a different comic book.
The man is just too prolific right now, and it's not like he's going to take time off, but it does sort of break my heart, because this is amazingly good.
Yeah, it's very great, and I guess I'm happy that it's will be 6 issues of Wonder, and then you can always just go, hey, there's 6 issues.
He's making a concise statement moving on. I mean, there's something to be said for that, but at the same time, I think I could go for at least a year on this. And
the thing is, he doesn't go very long for any of the Marvel books he's ever written. He's never written for, Next Wave, I think he would have done more if it sold, just because it was him being allowed to do what he wants.
Right.
But I think any of those other titles, they just kind of, he just kind of goes, I said what I want to say. I'll move on. But I am a buy on Moon Knight number 4. I'll probably end up being a buy on some of the original comic art from Declan Shalvey when I eventually break down before it disappears forever, because he won't be drawing it anymore.
Because he's going to die soon.
I'd probably just draw another book.
Someone's going to beat him to death with Ghost Nux.
Ghost Nux. I'm so upset that that page sold. I would have probably bought it by now if it was still available. Yeah, we're double buy Moon Knight. That's not understood, because it's amazing. Next up is Original Sin number 3. Interesting. It has gone in a direction I wasn't expecting.
It definitely has.
Yeah, I was not expecting it to anything to by that stuff that happens in this book. I was not expecting.
Yeah.
And there is, I guess, that's a merit of it. I guess that it surprised me. The jaded comics book fan who, supposedly can predict any twist and turn.
I just feel kind of like it's trying very hard to shock us.
Yeah, that's...
And that's my big deal with it, is, I was totally on board until the big shocking reveal at the end.
Yes.
Basically the page that I'm pointing at Robbie right now.
Yes, yes. We will...
It upset me a little bit. It's fine. I don't think there really should be any sacred cows in comics, but I think that they're really walking a fine line and just making something just turning the corner into being just bad and trying to be for shock value.
Yeah, that's, I'm withholding judgment on it up until this point, because it may pay off.
Yeah.
Depends on the payoff, honestly, of where it leads from this.
If it goes footprints on the brain,
yeah, it's bad. I'm off. Yeah, there's a lot of really interesting things in this book. The problem is with most big event books like this is that a lot of the stuff in this is in tie-ins.
Yeah,
like a lot. It's about secrets being revealed. All these characters have just found out, things, but you have to go read the Avengers book, or the Hulk book, the Hulk Iron Man crossover book. You can't just read this and get these stuff about the characters. Like, there's, I know in the Avengers book, Captain America is where he talks about the big secret that he learned, which is, ties back into New Avengers. But I wish I wish this entire book was just the Punisher and Doctor Strange.
Mm.
I want them to be
it's
like
an interesting odd couple.
I want them
it?
To be like a supernatural investigative team where Punisher like is like the ballistics guy and Strange is like the, they're like Sherlock should be like Sherlock, BBC Sherlock, where the Punisher is Watson. And
he's like Watson, but more of a dick.
More of a dick, and Strange is like Sherlock and less of a dick.
I love this idea. That's a good call.
But I don't think they're
going to. No, it's not going to happen.
Apparently, Doctor Strange book is in talks right now. That's what they said. When Kieran Gillen is leaving Iron Man, and he's like, I had an opportunity for another book at Marvel that I couldn't pass up, and all people are thinking that it's a Doctor Strange book. Which, the idea of Kieran Gillen writing a Doctor Strange book is pretty interesting to me, but we'll see if it actually comes to fruition. I'm a tentative buy on this book.
Yeah.
The art is still very, I don't think I read the credits, did I? It's the same
stuff. Oh yeah, I didn't hear you say Alopolis again, I don't think you did. Do you want to just read it here?
Jason Aaron, writer, Mike Diodato art, Frank Martin doing colors, Chris Alopolis doing letters. Yeah, I like Diodato's art a lot. He's kind of, a lot of people don't like him for some reason. I really like his work. I like, I always, of all the, like, the more, him and McNiven, of the guys who draw, like, super detailed, more realistic looking, those are the guys I like.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a fine line where sometimes you, like, hackneyed, I guess, or trite, or something. But I like Diodato a lot. So, I like the art. The story is, it really, that thing we were talking about with the last page and this big shocking reveal, which is, I would say, the most surprising thing that's happened so far in this book.
Yeah.
If the following issues, the next few, kind of take that shock and just go, you know, they don't utilize those emotions well, like, there's no catharsis for that. This could be turned into a retrospective do not buy, but maybe if you're a trade guy, just wait on for the collection and see how we feel at the end of this. But so I'm a buy now. In a month from now, I may be like, don't bother.
I don't know if it's catharsis that I'm particularly looking for. Taking it seriously.
Yes.
You know, I think is what you mean. Or,
yes, that too.
I don't know. I just kind of want it retconned immediately. Like, I do not like it.
I'm not necessarily against,
no, I know.
Against it. It depends what happens. It needs to.
Yes.
We need to see. It can go a million ways.
It absolutely could.
So I am a buy now.
I'm shocked we were able to talk about that and keep that spoiler free.
I think it is an important thing. You should not know that before the.
In case anyone's wondering, Snape kills Dumbledore.
Spoilers. But yeah, I'm a buy on this. I'm a buy on it for now.
Yeah, I think we're in the exact same boat.
We'll see where it goes, but so we're a double buy at the moment. Original Sin number 3.
Did you get the extended digital edition?
I probably did. I did not look at all that.
At least the black and white pages are pretty handsome.
Yeah, they look pretty nice.
I just sort of felt, and there's a whole second story.
Yeah, the digital
in here that I'm like, skip.
I read the first part of it. It did not intrigue me enough.
No.
There's additional digital comic with Nick Fury Jr.
I don't know why this is in there twice.
Maybe there's. So we're double by on that. Last up in for the week is their indie book. It is The Superannuated Man, number 1 by Ted McKeever.
I am really looking forward to this conversation.
Created, written, and illustrated by Ted McKeever. This is an odd book.
I think that is putting it mildly.
The story is basically, like, there's one human left in this world of, like, mutated animal people. And he's just kind of hanging out, trying to survive. Ted McKeever is one of these guys who does just a series of books like this, where he just kind of does his own little story, and it's weird. It's black and white, no color. I like his art, and it's interesting.
I think interesting is maybe the only way I can describe it. I don't know that I would particularly say that every page is overwhelmingly great. It is a thing to look at. I don't know. I think this is pretty light on story.
No, it's definitely not. It's not like, hey, like this really super compelling storyline. It's more just like, hey, look at this weird world. His art is weird.
That's basically all I'm getting for it too. The whole draw is I like to read weird things.
Yeah.
I'm the kind of person that likes weird things. This is weird. I'm going to buy it.
Yeah.
Like that's the audience is.
Yeah, I think so. It's kind of like I Am Legend, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess the good parts of I Am Legend before it got terrible at the end. The movie. I haven't read the story.
Okay.
Because I think the movie was very good up until the ending when they changed it.
Yeah, I was going to say that the ending was changed. Did you ever... Yeah, apparently you can, if you get the Blu-ray or
it
something...
It has the original ending, yeah. Yeah. It's much better. But yeah, testing. They tested it and tested poorly, so they changed it and made it too stupid. But there's not a whole bunch to say about this book other than what's selling it is mostly just weird. Like, hey, look, it's a weird art style and it's black and white and it's one guy, his vision, him doing what he wants. I think it's interesting and I think I'm gonna buy it. I think I like it enough to say you should buy it. If you like weird stuff, definitely buy it.
I would only recommend it to my weirdest of friends. I do not care for it. I'm not.
You're not a weirdo like me.
I'm not even going to allow any conjecture into that. This is just.
It's
like
really for your taste. You have to.
I think
it either clicks or it doesn't click.
And if you want to buy something weird that's crazily illustrated, go back to the auteur.
That's true.
That is superior to this. This book also sort of. It stars the guy that is kind of too old to be at the concert.
It's true.
Yeah.
I think that's very accurate.
That's exactly who that looks like. He's got just a chin beard.
He looks a little bit like Anthony Bourdain, actually.
No, I don't like Anthony Bourdain.
I'm a buy on it. I would say, I mean, like, you can look at the previews. Look at the free preview and say, do I like how that looks? If it's a no, don't buy it. It's that simple. I think and Eric is right. The Altar is another weird book that is I think more interesting.
I think more superior. More superior. Literally what I was going to say.
It's superior.
Is superior.
It's just more superior. But I think so. That's a split decision. Superannuated Man number one.
Mm-hmm.
I read a couple, I think, what? New Spearfoes of Spider-Man came out this week, number 12. Back with Nick Spencer and, yep, it's canceled after, I think, 15 issues. So, yeah, I'm upset as well. Eric's giving me crying motions.
Right now. I can pantomime.
Pantomime crying.
It doesn't come through so well.
No, the radio, it's not great for radio.
Not
but
great.
It's really fun. It's great. They have the Sinister 16 in this. There's 16 C-list villains all like fighting together. It's really great. The Armadillo is in this.
I'm holding out for the Walrus personally.
I don't think he's in this though.
That's a real shame.
Yeah, but it's excellent. I mean, if you're not already reading, you're probably not reading Spearfoes of Spider-Man because no one is buying it, and that's why they're canceling it. But it's a great book, and I'm upset.
Real heartbreak.
Terrible business that just destroys lovely, charming things like Spearfoes of Spider-Man. The other release, Black Widow, number 7, the newest one.
When is No Tor coming off of it?
I don't know. He's still doing it right now.
Is he? He put a guy in there.
There's a dude. He drew a nice figure of a dude instead of a nice figure of a lady.
Mm-hmm.
Someone got some Daredevil in this book.
I didn't know if that was a reveal because I've not read it.
It's not. It's like the third page. It's okay. Not a big deal.
It's not like, this book is probably sold as, hey, Daredevil's in it.
No, but it's really interesting. It's kind of watching Natasha kind of toe the line between being a full-on mercenary. That's Daredevil's concerned about her being too cold. But yeah, it's really good. I like it just as much as I've been.
Anything else blowing you away?
I bought a book called I Was the Cat because it was a dollar and it was had a picture of
a cat on it, so clearly you have to buy it. Can I see it?
Yeah, there's the art. That's the cover. Okay. It's like about this Lois Lane type she's invited to interview this mysterious benefactor, turns out to be a talking cat.
That's wacky.
It is, and it's not even, I don't think I'm going to buy the second one. It's not particularly
very deep.
No, it's not. It's really silly, and not the good time, not the silly I like, but... I would say don't buy I Was the Cat unless you like really like looking at art of cat, like painted comics of cats. Other than that, I'm gonna buy on it. It's a little silly. It's stupid. It's kind of dumb. I bought trades of Rat Queens and Pretty Deadly and Sex Criminals and
like actual printed copies.
Actual printed paper.
Why are you putting your device away? You actually have another print of paper of the book we're about to talk about.
Yeah, exactly. So that's it for Weekly Floppies. We're going to move on to our Nerd Boy Book Club.
What is Nerd Boy Book Club?
Nerd Boy Book Club is a segment where we talk about a longer form work, and we give people advance notice, and they can read along with us and ask us questions and give us ideas and suggestions and thematic. Just like a book club. Book clubs. People talk about books. Now we talk about comical books.
That's right.
And this week we are doing Mouse by Art Spiegelman.
Here's the thing to keep in mind. If you've not read, you get a zero.
Yeah, exactly. We do not give points for attendance.
There's no extra credit.
No extra credit.
Well, maybe if you come to a con and hug me,
that might work. And wear it, get in a picture.
Yeah.
Wear a hat.
No one can touch my hat.
I think you let someone wear your hat.
I don't remember that.
I think you did.
I don't remember that, but I'll take your word for it.
I think some young lad who was impressionable. It's like, can I wear your hat? And you're like, okay.
No, I punched him.
I think you did, right in the face.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
I so want to punch children.
This week we're doing Mouse. It is a introspective look on a guy's heritage and history of his family with the Holocaust.
I think that that's really a better way to look at it, because a lot of people's takeaway from this is that it is a book about the Holocaust.
It's not.
It's mostly about him and his relationship with his father.
Yeah, and his father, the framing mechanism, narrative mechanism for this book is him interviewing his father about the Holocaust, because he's going to be doing a comic about his father's history and experience, his life and experience with the Holocaust. And you get his father's history and his mother's history and his family and what they went through in the Holocaust, but you also get a lot of him, his life, his current relationship with his elderly father, and about people and about him, there's a scene with him with his therapist in the second book more so than the first. The first book is a lot more heavy on history. The second book is a lot more, I think, more introspective on his life necessarily and how he feels about all this stuff, not necessarily as much about his father and the Holocaust itself. Even though there's certainly a fair share of it in there. I don't know where to begin. I think I'll start by saying I don't like his father in the present, quote unquote, is fucking annoying as shit, and I don't like him.
He is kind of, I mean, then that's sort of a big point about it, that he is kind of insufferable. He doesn't like his father.
Yeah.
And he keeps saying, like, he can't come live with us.
I can imagine.
We will not be able to live with him. He's so annoying. And that's, really, there's not a whole lot in this book to dwell in and enjoy. It's not an enjoyable book to read.
No, it's really interesting. It's very interesting.
It is. Interesting is a way to describe it.
It is not like fun. Mm-hmm. It is not a fun. It's a book you go, wow, this is a good book, but not fun.
Yes.
I think it's very interesting about like his father is insufferable and like he's. And, like, he even mentions it in the book, like, he sounds like the racist Jewish stereotype, like this miserly old Jew.
Yes.
But he is a miserly, like, he's the cheapest guy, like, he has hundreds, apparently,
hundreds of thousands of dollars in the bank. And this is in the '80s.
Or seventies even, some of it.
Well, yeah, but he's reflecting back.
Yeah.
When this is written was in the '80s.
Which is worth, that's probably billions of dollars
it
now.
It could be, yeah. We're talking $1980 dollars. It's considerably more.
And he goes through garbage. He won't, like, and you were mentioning this last night over here about him.
Yeah, the matches.
He was renting this cottage something.
Yeah, this was during that summer.
Yeah, during the summer, and the gas is free. It comes with the rent, basically. So instead of expending every time he wants to light,
it was the oven. He had to pay for the wooden matches.
So he'd leave the pilot lights on.
In the oven.
So you can light stuff off of that. You don't need to use matches.
Yeah.
Which is insane.
Mm-hmm.
And then he
at the same time, I think one of the things that caught my eye that just made me laugh is when he throws his son's coat away.
I know! He throws out a perfectly good coat.
Just because he doesn't want him to wear it anymore. He's like, I threw your coat away. The garbage man's already took it away when you were here. And he's like, God damn it, Dad.
I know. I can't even imagine. It's just insane. And he is. I think it's very interesting when you contrast him with him as a young man in going through the war and the Holocaust, where he's incredibly...
He's brilliant and resourceful, and
thinks on his feet and survives these impossible situations.
He speaks like five languages.
Yeah. And
he's a very sort of admirable character through all of this.
And he organized, he's the leader of, a lot of, groups of his family and all these other people who are in the situation with him. And it's very interesting, these same traits that are so useful.
Mm-hmm.
In the
turn him into such a horrible husk of a person.
I know,
in his old age.
I know, because his resourcefulness and cheapness, quote unquote, mm-hmm. is wanting to use everything, keep everything, is what gets him through at the Holocaust and his wits and yet now he's incredibly frustrating to live with.
Yeah,
and they even bring up that point, is it the Holocaust that made him like this? And then the son is like, but there's other people I know who lived through the Holocaust, and they're fine. They're not crazy.
Mm.
They're not, like, the neighbors. At one point, those neighbors, they both lived through the Holocaust, they mentioned, and they're just normal people. And they talk about how crazy his father is. They're like, you can help him out once in a while, right? And they're like, maybe once in a while.
I think that it's kind of, it's particularly with reading both books of this, it almost feels a little bit, I don't know, sort of give me your thoughts on this. It almost feels a little bit like a misnomer to call it the Holocaust. Because when you think the Holocaust, you think just the death camps.
Yeah.
And that's actually a relatively small part of this two book collection that it shows the, sort of the descent into madness and how he's in Poland. Poland's taken over.
Yeah.
And they just more and more are oppressing
these
Polish Jews. And he spends a year in Auschwitz.
Yeah, exactly. And I think most people think, you say Holocaust, they think Auschwitz, they think death camps.
Exactly.
But it really was a process. The German government they started well before the war started. They slowly
drumming up the sense of nationalism and the racism, and that I think is it's not particularly fun.
No,
to think about
it doesn't get the exclamation points that in history books no one they don't talk about it as much about because they took anti-Semitism that was already kind of omnipresent in a lot of these cultures.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And then just went, hey, remember World War I? And why everything sucks right now? It's the Jews. It's their fault.
I mean, but that's why it's important to be able to look back on these things. That's what I'm saying. It's not particularly fun to look at this stuff.
No, no, no.
But it's important because it's just sort of human nature to fall into these traps.
Yeah.
And I think that we maybe even now are kind of falling into that trap, but certainly back in 2001, 2002,
yes,
we were very much in this place with Muslims.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and yeah. Humanity, countries, I'm not sure if it is indicative of things that governments do or if it's just people look for enemies.
Right.
It's hard to say what really the root of that is, but it can be important to look at these things and notice where the patterns are, because almost everything that happens in this book, some other people have done it to another people. Americans have done these things to indigent people in the Americans. You know, this is not the reason that this stands out so much in our memory is, I mean, the Jewish people are fairly capable of voicing this. They're not like Indians that are just going to get exterminated and then we just sort of have to feel terrible about it on our own later.
No, there's...
That they're going to say, yeah, this was really terrible and we're really traumatized and whatever.
Well, I think it's interesting that... Obviously, there's still lots of anti-Semitism.
One in four. I read a statistic about that supposedly one in four Americans now, modern day... are to some degree anti-Semitic,
which makes no sense to me. But
it is shocking, isn't it?
I just my frame of reference. It just seems like that. Like I've talked about this before. Like there's a subreddit called Conspiratard that makes fun of the subreddit R Conspiracy, which is full of like Jewish conspiracy insane people. And that's what it's like. If someone talks about like anti-Semitism, it's almost always like, oh, the Jews control everything, and blah blah blah. I'm like, that's like what crazy people think, but it's not as like there's one in four apparently is that's an insane amount of that's the same number. But if you asked about, I'm sure the numbers for people who are if you have those feelings about Muslim people, or Middle Easterners in general, I'm really sure it'd be higher.
Really, people will look for any excuse to look down on people they see as their out group.
Yeah, I just don't...
I think if it's just sort of a function of a culture that values, I don't know, certainly education, that's really a big function of it, which is why Jewish people are successful.
I know, it's crazy.
Who would have thought that you take care of yourself and you educate your children, and over time this leads to good things happening?
It's insane.
Who would think that people like that end up owning a bunch of stuff?
Yeah, it's a culture of, you know, of good business and intelligence and education, and that people, leads to success.
I mean, people crazy? A lot like Vladek. I mean, he owned a factory for a reason. It was because family, education, resourcefulness.
Yeah,
what the hell's wrong with that?
But, and I want to say we've moved past it. But we haven't. There's still...
Everybody feels like they've... Maybe they personally have. Like, I didn't. I used to think that sexism wasn't a problem until people were like, hey, it really kind of is. And I'm like, wow, there are a lot of shitty people in the world.
Yes, I think that's what we just... You come to the conclusion, yes, there are a lot of terrible people who just believe these awful things. I think the biggest artistic choice... I mean, aside from, you know, his art style, which we will get to, but portraying everyone as animals.
I think it's a little, I don't know, almost corny to me. What did you want to say about it?
Does
it look
like
you're biting something?
No,
back?
I mean, the only thing I didn't really understand the
whole cats and mice thing.
The cats and mice, that's understandable. One is a predator and one is the prey.
Yeah.
But I until I got to that, I don't know if you have this caption in your digital, this about the German, the article from the newspaper about Mickey Mouse. It's the most, here, I'll read it. Mickey Mouse is the most miserable ideal ever revealed. Healthy emotions tell every independent young man and every honorable youth that the dirty and filth-covered vermin, the greatest bacteria carrier in the animal kingdom, cannot be the ideal type of animal. Away with Jewish brutalization of the people, down with Mickey Mouse, wear the swastika cross. That's from a newspaper article, Pomerania, Germany, mid-1930s, before the war.
Hmm.
And after I read that, it came a little bit more clear.
And maybe that it sort of is based on that, like how he said you're going to be famous, like Walt Disney.
Yes, even though Disney was an anti-Semite.
They all were in those days. I mean, I think the Holocaust has probably done it's made people like Jewish people more, I think, because they feel like they have to.
It just took, all it took was a horrific genocide.
Exactly. It just took shitloads of people getting butchered.
But, that quote, and after I read that quote,
you know what that means?
Oh, yeah. Work will set you free?
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. That's the banner over Auschwitz. Mm-hmm. As you walked in, there's in German, it says, work will set you free. Which, yeah. Hilarious! Isn't that funny? They all died.
Yeah.
But yeah, all the Jewish people are mice.
Make sure you don't say it, pissy.
Yeah.
The Louis C.K. bit.
Yeah.
So he's a Jew. He's a Jew.
Yeah, you can't say it. Gotta say it nice.
You gotta say it nice. Yeah,
can't have any snake on it. But then the Germans are cats. Americans are dogs. The French are frogs.
I mean, or rabbits. Yes.
His wife.
She wanted to be a rabbit.
She chose to be a rabbit, so he made her a rabbit.
No, she's a mouse.
Is she a mouse at the end?
She's a
mouse. Oh, because she converts.
Yeah.
That's right. She converted.
She's a mouse the whole time.
That's right. I forget. She wanted to be the rabbit, but then he puts her as a mouse because she converted. She converted just because his father wanted her to. Mm-hmm. The one French man in this is a frog.
Is a frog.
I think the Swiss are like elk.
They're elk, deer. Yeah. That's correct.
But it really, and these are like, it paints these Germans as these predatory animals, always persecuting these poor mice.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think the motivation for that is, for making them an animal? Is it to lessen the impact, to make it more readable? Because, they're not, it's not people going through this torture, it's animals.
I think.
It's like more cartoony.
I don't think that's the case at all. I mean, I think you can definitely paint a picture of it being really horrible and grisly. You can do that, but it's more like just a bunch of black and white still pictures of terrible things happening.
Right.
Like when you think about when we read Scott McCloud, when we read Understanding Comics,
mm-hmm.
when he talked, like I kept coming back to that. He kept talking about the abstraction, the cartoonification,
mm-hmm.
and how you sort of project yourself and your own emotions
mm-hmm.
into an empty character like that. And this is sort of set up that way with the more realistic backgrounds and the less realistic characters.
Right.
And I think that's part of what he's trying to do here is
empathize with the mouse.
Yeah. You're supposed to feel that empathy more strongly, and it humanizes it, and it lets you sort of go along that journey a little closer. Yeah. There's an emotional distance, cognitive distance. I'm not sure what the correct term is, but if it was just like hyperrealism, it would sort of, you would be sort of sitting further back from it, looking at it happen, to where like this, you feel like you're really connecting. You're getting more down in the trenches.
I did forget to mention that the Polish
are pigs.
Yeah, which I know. And then I, strangely, like a lot, there's many scenes in this where the mouse, he is wearing
a mask
of a pig, or in some of the scenes in the second book where he's seeing his therapist, he is a human wearing a mouse mask. He is wearing...
Spiegelman is.
Yeah, Spiegelman.
It's the present day.
Yeah, he's talking to his therapist or his then wife, and,
Yes.
Which I think is interesting that there's a kind of a layer of metatextual
mm-hmm.
kind of exploration in there where he's...
All right, there it is.
Yeah, where it shows him even working on this comic, and he's wearing the mask.
I liked this part here just before this.
Ah, yes. You read the book. Now buy the vest.
That tripped me out.
The mouse vest, yeah.
That's one of the things that really stuck out to me, because I believe I mentioned, have I said it in the recording, that read this like in 2001 or 2002?
Mm-hmm.
But just book two, and almost all of it has surprisingly well stuck to me. Like, I remember an awful, awful lot of it.
Yeah.
But obviously everything in book one was completely new to me because I never read it.
Yeah. It's the second book is a lot more about, because it comes out, he released the first book, it was successful, mm-hmm. and then a lot of the second book is him dealing with...
Yeah, dealing with that
critical... Dealing with the success and how he feels about how he's going to continue the story. Like, how was the second book? And a lot of it feels like him... A lot of the book is about him talking about what this book should be about and his relationship with his father and how it's...
Yeah.
You know, how the book explores that. And I think a lot of this... is him trying to come to terms with the fact that he doesn't necessarily like his father, but he respects what he's gone through
and mm-hmm.
trying to deal with that, I guess, which is a lot of people's, you know, their experience with their family is that
many
you know,
of us
they
have
love
a,
them and they
yeah, many of us have
them.
Many of us have a complicated relationship with our dads in particular.
Yeah, and you love them and respect them, and sometimes it's hard to be around them, or which is his exact situation where he loves his father and he's trying to get this, and he is infuriated that his father, you know, burnt. I think that's the thing I was most upset with, and I think the character, the art is most upset is when he tells him he burned his mother's diaries.
Yes.
And all those, the history of what his mother went through.
And how he just sort of brushes past and he's like, ah, just forget about it. Can't do anything about it. And yet his father is obsessed about, like,
his mother, he talks about his mother commits suicide, and his father is remarried to a longtime friend of the family, and they hate each other, seemingly,
yeah.
and he's, like, paranoid about her wanting money, but it seems like she just wants to, you know...
Not hate herself, hate her life.
Yes, like, be able to buy a hairbrush and not be, like... yelled at about it, or being, you know.
Yeah, he's got greedy. Some Scrooge McDuck levels of thrift there.
Yeah, exactly. And
he probably has a giant ball of string that he collects.
Well, that string, you never know when you might need that string.
String is very useful.
Well, I could tie something together with that string.
You really can.
Could be a belt, that string. I could make it into a belt.
Yeah.
My pants are falling down.
You got one shoe.
One shoe, one wooden shoe.
One wooden
That's
shoe.
That's too big.
This doesn't fit, or it's too small.
No, the one shoe was too small, the other shoe was too big. So, that was the experience of one of the other characters in the concentration camp, one of the richest, one of the most influential men outside of it, and he has pants that are too big, one shoe that's too big, and one shoe that does not fit at all. And I think he dies, like most of the characters in this. They just, you know, they go, oh, I never saw him again. It's pretty brutal in that, you just kind of, in a caption, they disappear forever. They don't even get... At several points, the father, he talks about, oh, this could have been what happened to them. A guard could have took their hat and thrown it away and said, go get your hat.
Yes.
And then shot them in the back for trying to
escape. For trying to run away. And they would just do this because they wanted a day off.
Yeah.
Because they'd be like, oh, you shot someone that's running. You take a day of vacation.
Yeah. The art style. Do you like his art? I like
black and white comic art.
Yeah.
I sort of don't like the oversimplification of the characters. I mean, it's not bad. It gets a little tough to look at over the course of the book.
Right.
It's got a lot of charm to it, you know. It's sort of in an R. Crumb way, you know. It's particularly, I think... like that. When we talk about his old book.
Yeah.
Prisoner on the Hell Planet, where he wrote about his mother's suicide.
Yeah, and there's a portion of that in the... is that the whole thing? I have no idea.
It could be the whole thing. It could just be a selection.
I thought I remember hearing that, you know, it's a longer work. But
That might be the only thing that's relevant.
Exactly. He included it just to show that, oh, look, his father actually read one of his comics, because he never expected his father to read any of his work, regardless of... He's like, because he is... I think it's also interesting, there's pictures in this of actual people. Like, there's multiple times where they, like, near the end especially, you see actually his father as a young man.
In his
in his
prison outfit.
Yeah. So that kind of juxtaposition of these extremely cartoonish mm-hmm. characterizations of these characters right next to actual photographs is really interesting.
I think it's effective, and you know, we talk about how you project yourself onto these cartoons, and then it sort of brings you back to reality. I think it just sort of reinforces that, yeah. You know, to where it's that light touch, you realize, you know, it's not just. There's a lot of reality
yeah.
that this is grounded in.
Yeah, but the art is interesting and certainly skilled,
mm-hmm.
and it really does. It tells the story very well. Warren Ellis actually mentions this book in one of his most recent newsletters. He talks about like the grid system, like a Watchmen has, or even Alan Moore's From Hell,
yeah.
which has even more of a grid system. But this book is almost all grids. There's not crazy kind of diagonal or stuff like that. And it's like he relates it to how in prose, almost everyone writes "he said."
Mm-hmm.
And like in dialogue, it's like I said this, blah, 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 quote unquote, he said. And Emma's always uses said. You don't, it's like a big faux pas.
He
exclaims or yells, or you don't need that.
Well, I mean, if you maybe once in a while
yes.
is okay.
But not every time.
Yeah, if you've got it on every page, it's certainly the sign of a weak writer, most people say.
And they say because it's transparent. Because
yes.
after a while, you read it and you don't even see it anymore.
Exactly.
He said it. It's just
exactly
it's there. It lets you immerse yourself. And he says it's the same thing with this grid system. It is almost invisible. You don't even see it after a while.
Yeah, you're not thinking about panels, and you're not thinking about, oh, this person's trying to do something wacky with this page and trying to tell an alternative style. That's an interesting point. I'd never thought about it that way.
And he says that in Ellis, he lists off three or four things of like the best works. Watchmen's one of them. He says this as well,
the
grid system, it makes it the storytelling more transparent.
Yes.
I don't think there was ever a moment in this book where I didn't know what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think that's worth something.
Yeah.
It's strong storytelling is, especially in something that is like this,
yes.
where it's telling kind of maybe two stories. It's telling him the, mm-hmm. the story of the son and the story of the father.
Yes.
And does a very good job at that.
What else anti-Semitic can we say?
I think I really like that the scene where the first time they saw a swastika.
Yeah.
That stuck with me. And when they're traveling into
Was it in Poland?
Yeah, they're traveling into a bigger city or something, and that was the first time we saw a swastika. In 1938, before the war, first time he saw a swastika with his own eyes. And I think it's interesting that that there was no illusion about what was going on in Auschwitz. Everyone there knew mm-hmm. exactly what was happening,
mm-hmm.
which I think a lot of people. I don't know, like people trying to gloss over that fact. Like, oh, they didn't know. Who knew? You know, they were just, a lot of people were just completely befuddled, but everyone, they're like, oh, everyone knew by then. Like before, by the time the war started and they had set up the concentration camps, they're taking people away. They were, you know, everyone knew.
It's pretty terrible what we're capable of looking the other way of.
Yeah.
Think about all the fucking terrible shit that we're implicit in now.
Yeah.
And we're just like, okay, I need to take my phone out and tweet. Never mind that there's a bunch of Chinese people killing themselves to bring me this phone.
Yes, yes, the factories in
but they're
China.
They don't have real emotions.
Yeah, of course
they're not. They're less than human. They're undoubtedly they're a race, but they're not human.
That's
a quote in this book.
Yeah, from Hitler. The Jews are a race, but they are not human.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to touch on in this?
I don't know. What else is really depressing we can talk about?
I know.
What is really depressing and very, very racially, you know, charged?
I've touched on all the things that really stood out to me. It's very good. I certainly would suggest reading it.
I don't know that I'd call it. I don't think good is the way I would describe it. I would certainly not describe. I mean, it is very, very important and well done.
Well, that's what I mean by good.
Yeah, I guess it depends on what you're coming at it from goodness. Like, I did not enjoy reading Mouse again.
Oh, I think it's important to sometimes read things you don't enjoy.
No, I can see eye to eye with that, but it's still... It's a deeply troubling book. At no part of it are you having a good time.
No, and I think...
It is not fun at all, as it, of course, would be.
Yeah, there's a lot of, like... Like, Schindler's List is the most probably famous work of, like, Holocaust... Fiction about the Holocaust. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is... I like this better than Schindler's List. Mm-hmm. There's a more recent movie about the Holocaust. It's called Boy in the Striped Pajamas. I don't know if you are familiar with it at all.
No, it doesn't sound familiar to me.
It, like Schindler's List, plays a little too much with, like, fantastical elements, I guess.
Uh-huh.
And I just don't think, I don't need that in some story about human tragedy. I think this is better just because it's very, I mean, despite the fact that everyone is an animal, like you said, it almost becomes invisible after a while. You don't even think about it. And it's very grounded. Mm-hmm. There's nothing, you know, nothing crazy that, I mean, it's just this guy traveling, him and his family trying to survive. There's nothing fantastical about it. There's no kind of explorations about, you know, there's not a character, like the German, Ralph Fiennes in the Schindler's List, you know, this brutal German commandant or whatever he's in charge of whatever.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, but this is not, I think this is more concise, and it's actually a better telling of what these people went through, because it shows exactly a Jewish perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Schindler's List is like, it's about Schindler, who was not Jewish himself.
So. Yeah.
But I think this is a better work about the Holocaust. It's the best one I've experienced. I'm sure that I guess that's fair, because what's the name of that book? L.A. Wiesel.
Knight.
Knight, yeah. Knight's also very, very good.
Hmm.
And I would say it's similar to this.
I think the two are comparable.
Yeah, exactly.
But
I would... It's, like, it is hard to read. It's not certainly, like we touched on in the beginning, it's not fun.
No.
But it's important and well done.
It is certainly those things. I never want to read it again.
It's one of those things you read,
like,
every 10 years. And you go,
maybe so.
Yeah, and you go, okay, I read it.
It makes me think of, I dated a girl once that her and one of her friends, they went to the Holocaust Museum in St. Petersburg.
Yeah.
And I was like, why would you do that? Because she said they went and spent the whole time crying. Like, why would you subject yourself to that? But it is certainly important to recognize these things.
Yeah.
If for any reason, just to understand how sort of dark our nature is and how easy it is for people to go. Because these German people, they're easily vilified. You know, Nazis are the de facto villain in how many different video games and movies?
Well, it's easy.
But I mean... You know, my family came over from Germany in, the 17th century. Genetically, I'm very similar to these people. My family, very similar to these people. And it's hard to look at them like they're stormtroopers in Star Wars. You know, that they're just faceless thugs. That they're just salt-of-the-earth folk that got caught up in a very fascist era and just sort of, you know, fell into something horrible, spun out of control for everybody. The world was absolutely insane at this time. You know, England was becoming fascist and lots of parts of the world, people were really warming up to the idea of being fascist. It was in vogue.
A lot of it is products of World War One. What happened after World War One?
Absolutely.
And it's
the whole like finding, you know, the out group to blame. I mean, it was sort of an economic necessity of them.
Yeah, they wanted. There's Germany's economy was worse than anything. It was worse than the Great American Great Depression.
Yes,
it was unbelievably bad, and the way the German government saw their way out of it was
let's find this scapegoat. Out exactly, and it totally worked, and it completely revitalized Germany and turned into that
the power of nationalism.
Yeah,
it can be very powerful.
And that is why it's important. Could very easily fit into our own current situation.
Yes,
a exactly. Soft economy, and people are just looking for someone else to blame.
Yes,
thank God we're all, you know, the left is blaming the right, and the right's blaming the left.
Yes,
no. when we all get a little bit more racist, it will completely run off the tracks.
I think that's a solid discussion.
I think so.
We're gonna have a special guest with our discussion for One Piece, which is a manga series. We're gonna do the Arlong Park arc, which is I believe 8 through 11, so four volumes.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're gonna have a special guest next week. Be reading One Piece. We very seldom explore manga.
We have not yet. Yeah. Hopefully we can do a little bit more of this.
Yeah. So, guys, want to have any thoughts on it? Let us know. If you have any other good manga series to suggest, please.
Give us a shout.
Yeah, we'd love to hear from you. We are embarking on this because of some of the conversations we had at MegaCon.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people very excited. I mean, I know manga is a huge industry.
Tons of I gotta work on you a little bit. Gotta get you reading some.
I just need suggestions. I've enjoyed what I've read.
Yeah,
it's just imposing because you see like
no,
series with 70 books, and you're like,
oh. Yeah, there are. I don't even know how many of these mangas there are. One Piece is I've been reading it for almost a decade.
Yeah,
and it was old then.
Yeah,
it is a very old manga. I don't even know when these books were published. But this is I'm excited because this is the part where I started to actually like One Piece quite a lot.
Okay.
And it just gets better from this point. This is really a great jumping on point.
Yeah. So with that, folks, I think that'll bring us up to a close. We are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour. You can find us at handsomeboyscomicshour.com. You can find us on iTunes. Search Handsome Boys Comics Hour. You can find us and only us. Please subscribe if you like us. Leave us good reviews. Good reviews get us more listeners, and that's good for everybody. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/HandsomeBoysComicsHour. Like us there. You can see us in your feed, even though Facebook just recently updated our page to the newest thing, and it didn't work for a bit. But well, hopefully it'll work now. we're also on Twitter, @HBCHour. Tweet at us there. You can reach us by email at handsomeboyscomics@gmail.com. You can also find us on Tumblr, handsomeboyscomicshour.tumblr.com. I post a lot of just, you know, art, cool...
Tumble things.
It's Tumblr. You know what Tumblr is. If you are on Tumblr, you know Tumblr.
Here's a Tumblr. Picture of a cat on a piece of pizza.
Yep. Cat on pizzas. That's it for us. For me, you can find me on Twitter @MixMasterCereal. It's MixMasterCereal, the same name on Tumblr. Eric, where can they find you online?
You can see my portfolio by going to freewillunlimited.com. And you can see most of the things I get up to online by going to ericzgoodnight.com. And you can tweet at me. My Twitter handle is Mr. Bad Example, spelled M-R Bad Example.
So until next time, folks, have a good one.
Rock and roll.